Hello, this is Gideon Rothstein. This is a responsive day for the 25th of Tishrei. Welcome. Today we're going to study Rav Uziel's reaction to the issue of maintaining communal customs and whether communities have to rally around a single custom or whether pluralism is okay in these kinds of issues. This is from Shut Mishpatei Uziel Krach Dala, the fourth volume, the first responsum in the Inyanim Klalim in the general issues. And the topic really is the question of Lotit Godudu. There's a pasuk in the Torah that tells us, most literally, as we'll see Rav Uziel discuss, that we're not allowed to tear at our bodies in mourning and make scratch marks on our bodies in mourning. But it was also applied to the question of how much differences there can be among and within the Jewish people. And this is a response that he wrote on the 25th of Tishrei of Tuf Reish Tzadi Tet of 1938. And the question was, from a rabbi of the time, that this is 38 already, they were noticing a great growth in the population of Israel. I think by that time it was in the low 100,000s. But there had been an influx over the course of the 1930s in Jews in the land of Israel. And they come from various places, so they have various customs. And everybody wants to keep the custom of their forefathers. So the question that came up that the person was asking Rav Uziel was about na'anuim of lulav, shaking of a lulav. Because on Sukkos, there are different possible ways that people shake a lulav. So for example, a common Ashkenazi custom is to shake it ahead of yourself, then to the right, then to the back, then to the left, then up and then down. But there are others who do it other ways. So in a certain shul, you'd have various people shaking their lulav various ways, and they all have sources in the Rishonim and the Shulchan Aruch, but they're davening in one shul. So what's nice about it, the person writing the letter says to Rav Uziel, is that people get along, right? There's tolerance, we might call it today, right? Everybody's willing, or maybe even pluralism. We're willing to let everybody do their own thing, and it's all great. And then it also comes up in the questions of what piyutim you say, and whether you say tachanun or not, and how you act when you say tachanun. So the man writing to Rav Uziel says, isn't this an issue of lo titgodudu? So we'll get to it. And lo titgodudu, he says, by the way, I don't understand it in general. So could you explain how lo titgodudu works? And I'm asking for halachic reasons. I want to understand the halachic issues. So this raises the question of, to what extent are Jews allowed to adhere to differing customs? And Rav Uziel's answer is one that I think is from 1938, but a long time ago, I learned the sugya a little bit, and I even gave a couple of shiurim on it. And it seems that Rav Uziel's approach is the one that stems from the sources that I remember, and yet is in stark contrast to the way we handle things today. Very often today, people will just say, well, let everybody do their own thing, right? It's sort of, and I'm not somebody who likes criticizing what we take from the outside world that much, but I notice it. You know, we take from the outside world, oh, just let everybody do what they want, and let's all get along, and it doesn't matter what other people do. So Rav Uziel is going to point out that there is a strong traditional push not to act that way in ways that we're about to see. So let's see what Rav Uziel has to say. He says he starts by saying that among the ma'alot, the elevated qualities of the Jewish people, different than other nations, is that we find unity in our Torah. For thousands of years since Har Sinai, since the Torah was given at Sinai, we've had exiles, we've had attempts to destroy us, we've had external influences, we've seen other life customs, we've seen, he doesn't say cultural, but that's what he means. We've lived among various cultures, we've lived in people who speak various languages, so when you absorb language, maybe you absorb ways of thinking about things, so people spoke Romance language, Hindu, Arabic languages, Slavic languages, right? And despite all of that, he says, Judaism is still pure and whole. And as much as they've tried to damage the unity of Torah, and various people have come along to claim the Torah is what it should be, he mentions the Shomronim, the Sumerians, the Tzdukim, the Sadducees in the time of the Gemara. There are the Karaites. He doesn't mention that, I don't think, but there's Reform Judaism, Conservative Judaism, right? People make strongly different claims about the way Judaism works and about the way Torah works. So about those past ones, in his time, he wasn't going to talk about Reform and Conservative yet, but in the past ones, he says they're either gone, right? You don't really have Sadducees today, or mitkaimim kiyum aluv, or they just are sort of hanging on. There's a few of them left, some here, some there, but they're clearly going to, on their way out of the picture of Jewish history. So this unity, he says, of Torah, and the fact that Jews really fundamentally agree on Torah, which is certainly less true today, I think, than it was in his time, in terms of how much we can agree about what the Torah fundamentally says. He says that unity of Torah, achdut zot, novat mi chido shel olam. It's sort of it extends from, and it's a symbolism of, it's a living out of the fundamental unity of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, right? It gives testimony when we have unity among the Jewish people around our Torah. We sort of give implicit testimony about the existence of a one God who brings us all together. So that's already a framework that I'm not sure people think about. If I said to you, is there an issue, is it a problem at all, if different people have different views of what the Torah says about things and we just all do our different thing, what issue is there with that? So there's going to be a technical halakhic issue we'll get to in a second, but he's starting us off by saying there's also a theological issue, that when we are together and unified as one, and as one nation, and we observe a Torah, we adhere to a Torah that's all the same for all Jews all over the world, that projects an image of unity that reflects the unity of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That would mean that if we don't do that, and if people get used to meeting Jews and say, oh, this kind of Jew does this thing, and this kind of Jew does that thing, that's a problem in terms of our representation of God in the world. That's in the broader thought perspective of the issue. But let's get into the halakhic technicalities of the issue. He points out that we have a Mishnah that says, we have a Gemara that talks about the fact that the Mishnah says that you can read the Megillah. This is the first Mishnah in Masechet Megillah, says that in the time of the Mishnah, there were various dates upon which one could read the Megillah. One could read it on the 11th of Adar, the 12th, the 13th, the 14th, which is when most of us do it, and the 15th, which is when people in walled cities like Yerushalayim read the Megillah. So in discussing that, Rish Lakish says, Rav Yochanan, isn't that a problem of lo tidgodidu? Meaning, shlakish means, meaning that we're not supposed to, that he understood the pasuk to mean, we're not supposed to have different groups of Jews observing the Torah in different ways. So how that plays itself out in terms of reading the Megillah on Purim, we'll get back to. But before we get there, Rav Uziel pauses to say, that's an odd question of Reish Lakish to begin with, because the pasuk of Lo Tidgodidu most obviously means that, in the context, it's loti to go do al mate, that if somebody sadly loses a relative, they're not in the course of their mourning allowed to tear at their bodies in distress over the passing of the person passed away. So how does Reish Lakish get from there to say that lotit godidu means we can't make different groups of the Jewish people, meaning one group, in his case, reading the Megillah on the 11th, another group reading it on the 14th, another group on the 15th, that we can't make different groups among the Jewish people? Whatever the answer is to that in terms of Megillah, Rav Uziel is first bothered by, what's the answer? How are you deriving that from a pasuk that clearly means something else? So he says that Reish Lakish apparently understood that there was two levels of meaning, both of them having halachic validity. In other words, both of them actual valid meanings of the pasuk for halachic purposes. One addresses an individual, so the individual can't tear at his body. And another one about the body of the nation as a whole, right? And the body of the nation whole also is not allowed to make tears or rends in the body. And that both of these are Torah prohibitions. And so Ruziel says, it's sort of like a lav shebichlalut. We have other examples, where the Torah says something and it's a prohibition that applies to a lot of different circumstances. Ruziel doesn't give examples, but one that always comes to my mind is that the Torah says, lo tochlu al adam, which literally means you can't eat blood and you can't eat meat with the blood in it. But the Gemara takes in various other ways that are also assumed to have halachic validity, such as, for example, with the rule that one should not eat before praying in the morning. The Gemara bases it on this pasuk of Lo Tochlu Al Dam. It says you shouldn't eat Lo Tochlu until you've prayed Al Damchem, prayed over your blood, over your soul, over your body, thanking Hashem for your existence and praying for more of it. So here in our example, it would be two levels of Lo Tochlu, be like a Lav Shebichlalut. One example being the person shouldn't scratch themselves in mourning, and the other being the Jewish people are not allowed to scratch themselves, as it were, to tear rends in themselves by deciding they're each going to have their different practices. So that means, he says, that what's supposed to happen when you have a machloket, when you have a debate, when you have a difference of opinion as to handle a situation in halacha, so you should sit down, argue it out, and take a vote on it. We're supposed to go to a Beit Din, and he says the Beit Din in that city, Shia Ba'ir, Shua Shofet, Shibiyamav, which is the judge of that city. So the Beit Din in each city has a power to say, well, in this city, this is how we handle it, if they know the answer. If they don't, then you go to a higher level of Beit Din. And that's the pasuk in the Torah that says, you go to the Kohen or to the Mishofet, Asheyeh Bayamimahim, who's in your time, and you do what they tell you. So the Rambam happens to include in that pasuk and in that prohibition the idea that you shouldn't even have two batei din in one city. Because, so he says, shigosh, the Rambam says, because it's goreim memachlokot gidolot. It causes, now we, I think, because we tend to think that to mean that it causes great disputes, right? We usually think of machlokot as dispute, but I'm not quite sure. Now, Rav Uziel, I think, is going to take it that way, because he's going to see a difference between the Rambam, this Rambam, and Rashi, where Rashi seems to think that it's a problem of leading to the misimpression that there isn't one Torah. The Torah can be different for different people. So that would mean that just the fact that there's differences among us would be a problem to go through, whereas the Rambam, if you read it this way, sounds like he means that it leads to disputes, and therefore, theoretically, if we could all say, well, even though we don't act the same way, it's not going to lead to disputes, then maybe the Rambam would say that it was okay. That's, I think, the general way to take it. I have to say that as I was preparing this to share with you, it occurred to me that I'm not positive that that's what the Rambam means. It occurred to me that the Rambam might mean something more along the lines of Rashi, that machlokot gedolot, a machloket doesn't always have to mean a dispute where there's bitterness or animosity from one side to the other. Machlokot gedolot could just also mean that it leads to great differences among people, right? If I think that, you know, Shabbos starts at 4 and ends at 5, and you think that, no, Shabbos starts at 5 and ends at 6. So even if we respect each other, and if we completely are tolerant of each other, pluralistic towards each other, it still causes great differences among us about what time we'll have Shalosh Shittos, what time we'll have a Friday night dinner, all sorts of issues that just create machloket, as in division. Not division, as with animosity. So I think that's a point that I never thought of before. Maybe it's obvious to everybody listening, in which case I apologize, and I'm happy to hear from you about it. My email is grothst@gmail.com. But I think that's something worth thinking about, that it might be that when we say we need to avoid machloket, we don't always mean need to avoid machloket as in the animosity of machloket. We might need to remember that we're supposed to avoid machloket in terms of the separation of machloket. That, if that's what Rama meant, then it really is much closer to the whole idea of Rashi, that we're supposed to be finding the unity of Torah and not creating more and more opportunities for division of Torah. And this is relevant to lots of other issues, and I don't want to editorialize too much, but for example, if we think about whether we want a Sanhedrin or don't want a Sanhedrin, this is what the Rama might admit, was certainly talking about, because he talks about the fact that in the time of the Sanhedrin, you had one Torah for the whole Jewish people, and that was because the Sanhedrin made decisions about things. Not quite our topic, although not completely off topic, so it's not just a rambling digression of mine. But let's get back to Rav Uziel. So then he wants to talk about whether or not you need this problem of agudot lo tigodudu applies even to minhag issues. Okay, so he says in the Gemara, it seems that even when it comes to a minhag, so for example, the Gemara says there are places that do malacha Erev Pesach before Chatzot. There are places where people work and allow themselves to work on the Erev Pesach before noon. So afternoon is a big problem of working on Erev Pesach because it's the time when we would have offered the Korban Pesach. And since we would have offered the Korban Pesach back then, that was a time when people weren't allowed to work. But in terms of whether people also didn't work Erev Pesach before Chatzot, that was already much more of a question. And the Gemara, the Mishnah in Pesachim, presents it as a matter of some places did and some places didn't. So it sounds like there's no lo tidgodudu problem. There's no problem of separation. And so too, the Maharashdam in the 1500s in Italy was an important posek. Yeah, and the Rush also said that if it's a matter that's toloi b'minhag, if it's dependent on custom, the Maharashdam held, this was one of the early times when Ashkenazim and Sephardim first began to meet and live in the same places by virtue of, I think, the expulsion, right? He lives in the early 1500s, so the expulsion from Spain is leading to people meeting up with different customs. Maharashdam said, whatever is a matter of custom, right, it's not a matter of halach, it's a matter of custom, even if you have two groups that come up in the same place and they each follow their original custom, it's not a problem. That's what the Maharashtam Paskin. Why not? Because if I have a custom to do this, you have a custom to do that, there's nothing in my custom that implies there's something wrong with your custom. It's that each of us developed our own custom about something, and that's fine. That's the way the Maharashtam had it. But the Rambam who had held. Now, this is a problematic psak of the Rambam because people don't understand why. Because the Rambam seems to pass like Abaye, who said that you can't have two courts in the same city. It has to have one central court with the same ideas coming out from all the courts, whereas Rava there had said, no, let's go to Zoli if within one court there's a lasting dispute. But the Rambam would say that you shouldn't have two batidim, and that would mean that if one group has one custom, another group has another custom, so that would be a problem for the Rambam. And he has a tshuva, Rav Uziel quotes, and says, where he says that you're supposed to try to avoid having any machloket on any matter. So again, machloket here, I think this sort of supports what I said before, machloket here can't mean fighting, because we're talking about Ashkenazim know their Ashkenazim, Sephardim know their Sephardim, and they're just doing what they do. So he means that when Rav Uziel is quoting this about machloket, he means machloket as in we're not supposed to have divisions. So that means that he doesn't think even a matter of minhag, and that's what the Rambam said as well. The Ramah, Rav Uziel points out, in Orech Chaim Tuf Tzadi Gimel, paragraph 3, Sif Gimel, the Ramah said, V'lo yin hagubi irachat miksatam min hagzeh, and miksatam min hagzeh. Some people are doing this minhag, some people doing that minhag, because of lo titko to do. So this today, and that's a clear Ramah, this today is a very big problem, because in many shuls, right? So one question was whether you could have in one town or one city different shuls doing different customs. But there are plenty of shuls where within the shul there's different customs. Or Rav Uziel is pointing out that that's a very big challenge. Let's go do. Now, if yours is the custom that's going to be rejected because the shul is going to decide this is our custom, it'll be uncomfortable for you and to think about it, and you'll feel put upon. But it seems like Rav Uziel is pointing out the sources seem to say that we're not allowed to do that even in matters of custom. Magen Avraham said, coming back to our Megillah question, that Megillah was different. The reason why different people could read Megillah at different times was because that was the original setup of Megillah. When Rachazal, when Rabbanan established the obligation of Megillah, they said, if you're in this kind of a place, you read on this date, this kind of place on this date, they're going to do that. That's not a matter of we dispute the halacha is like different people. Meaning, if I had a halacha that applied to people who are over 5'4 in one way, and people who are over 5'10 in another way, and people over 6'2 in another way, that's not a matter of logic to go. That's a matter of this is what the halacha says about this issue. Right, anyway, mezuzah is supposed to be about two-thirds up on the way of the doorway. So is it supposed to be 5 feet from the floor or 7 feet from the floor? It depends on the size of the doorway. So when you have halachos that depend on things, that's what the Magen Avraham says about the Megillah issue. But in a matter where it's not because of who we are that there's a split, but we just say there's a different way to handle it, right? So some people eat kidney oils and Pesach, let's say. That's an example of Uziel, but an example that occurs to me always. Right? Some people eat kidney oils and Pesach, some people don't eat kidney oils and Pesach. So if they come to one place together, then they need to establish a joint custom. That's what the Rabbi and the Rambam seem to say. A joint custom. Now, that's something that people very much object to. To me, Uziel doesn't quite say it. Doesn't mention kidney oils, he's talking about Na'anuim. But if you came to a place like Israel, so when people come to Israel and are gathered into Israel, it would mean that if Israel already has a custom, they would have to adopt that custom that they find in Israel, whatever it would be. So that becomes to be a very complicated sociological thing, because that's what Raziel is saying. When it comes even to Minhag, we're supposed to adopt, at least in particular towns and places, joint customs. And then he says he thinks that it might be a debate between Rashi, a difference of opinion between Rashi and Rambam about the whole lo titko do thing. Because Rashi's reason was, shelo tiye Torah kishtei Torot. That you don't want the Torah to look like or to be two Torahs. So if that's true, if it's a matter of protecting the image of Torah and making clear that Torah is just one Torah, then when it comes to Minhag, since Minhag isn't a matter of what the Torah said, it's a matter of customs that arose, there's room to say that Rashi would think that would be okay to have different people doing different Minhag. That would mean, though, that on any issue where it's a matter of Psak Halacha, you would need in any particular place to pass in the Halacha a certain way, because Rashi would say, well, that looks like two Torahs. The Rambam is going even further and saying, if, so the way Rav Uziel says, it's the words that go in the Machlokot, which I am understanding to mean that it's a matter that will lead to division, then every city has to be joined, has to be unified, that in all matters that relate to Torah and to the religion, we all do the same thing, because you don't want to have machlokot. So that seems like Rav Uziel says, according to everybody, minhag is a matter of where you live. And so if people leave the place where they lived, even if they're a whole group, they're not allowed to, if they come to a new place where there's an establishment already, and theirs is different, to establish a new minhag according to their customs. That, so Rav Uziel says explicitly, he's disagreeing with the Maharashtam. Maharashtam is writing in the 1500s, is an Akron, an early Akron, an important Akron, and yet Rav Uziel says he doesn't think that's the halacha, he doesn't think it's true that people from someplace else who come to a new place, and that new place already has an established custom, are allowed to make their own customs. He thinks that's a lotus kodu issue. Now, some people think that the reason why they have to keep the old custom is because we're required to keep customs, and there's a pasuk in Mishle, which is quoted often as Al Titosh Torati Mechas, the reason why we have to keep the customs is because we're supposed to hold on to the Torah of our mothers, as it were, the Torah of our nation, the past custom that we have. So, Rav Uziel says, but that's not a full obligation. Even Maharashtam, who said that they could keep the old customs, he never said that they have to. If they wanted to come to the new place and yield to the custom of the place, if they're not planning on moving back, then the whole issue of having to adhere to those old customs, even if they were more stringent, very often we'll say that somebody who was in a new place but came from an old place has to keep both stringency, the stringencies of the place that he left and the stringencies of the place that he came to. But Rav Uziel points out, that's only if he's planning on going back. But if he's not going back, then when he comes to the new place, he can keep the customs of the new place, even lahakel, even to be lenient. Right? So theoretically, if somebody moves from America and they come to Israel, and today I don't know what the custom is, but let's say they came to Israel in a time when the custom was that everybody ate kitniot on Pesach, so they can't accept that as a custom because the custom of the old place doesn't matter anymore because it's not their custom anymore because custom is tied into place, Rav Uziel was saying. And then he quotes, there's a Ran who had said, and this is where the Maharashtam got some of his ideas from, there's a Ran who said that every custom that isn't a matter of mistake or they don't know what they're doing, but it's a chumrah that they developed, and they developed it as a siag, as a way to protect their observance, that they'll be more makir, they'll be more stringent to make sure they don't violate anything. So if that's a custom that was accepted in a certain place, then everybody in that place is obligated to follow it. Again, a matter of the custom in the place. And everybody who leaves and comes back has to follow it as well, and he has to do it even in private. But the Ran says he has to do that as long as he plans to go back. But as soon as he leaves that place and he moves to another place, he's no longer bound by it. Because there are many things that we do in halacha that what's binding us to it is that it's a custom of the place that we're in. But if we leave that place, then we don't have that custom anymore. And so then he says, and so now Rav Uziel says, so once I pointed out this out to you, the Maharashtam never said you must keep your old customs, and Al Titosh Torati Mecha means you have to do what you grew up with no matter where you live. It's not what it means. It means you have to do what you grew up with as long as you live in the place that you grew up. Right? You have to do those customs, get the custom of the place. But even Maharashtam would agree that if, you know, all the Ashkenazim who moved to Amsterdam or all the Sephardim moved to Amsterdam could adopt the local custom, then Rav Uziel says it makes sense to him that they should. And the reason they should is to avoid machloket, to avoid not just dispute, but division. And this is, I think, today really a radical idea. The Jews should be trying to mix in together and with each other and finding unified customs to adopt together so that we all do pretty much the same thing as each other. That applies especially to customs of prayer. The Maharashtam had written that since most of the changes of custom about prayers don't touch on the aspects of the prayers that Chazal actually set up, meaning Chazal in the Gemara set up a skeleton of what our tefillot look like. And so that skeleton is almost always kept to both by Ashkenazim and Sephardim and those who daven Nusach Ari and this and this and whatever the various customs there are of prayer. They usually don't touch on those aspects of tefillah. They touch on piyut that got added later, or krovitz, other things got added later, and therefore there's no Al Titosh Torati Mecha. That's what the Maharashtam said, and therefore he thinks you can have, again, these separate versions of davening going on, not in the same shul, but in the same town. But the Baal HaShulchan disagreed, and the Magen Avraham quoted an Ari, right, which is a Kabbalistic way of looking at the world, but I think it's an interesting comment on it. The Ari had said that you shouldn't change from the custom of the place because there are different gates in heaven for different prayers, and every place basically has its own gate. So therefore, if your prayers are said the wrong way for that place, then they don't go through the gate. So whether or not mystically, whatever that means mystically, and whatever is the truth of the way heaven works, it's an interesting idea that prayer is somewhat place-specific as well, and therefore the words of prayer that might be fine and good in one place aren't as good in another place. But in any case, Ruziel says, whatever that's true in our private prayers, certainly it's true that if somebody's in another shul, right, an Ashkenazi Jew is davening in a Sephardi shul or vice versa, there's no way that they can daven in a different nisuch. You have to adopt the nisuch of the shul that you're in as you're davening there. And therefore, he says, we've learned that you can't change tefillot. I'm sorry, I went into this too quickly. He says all that, and then it comes to the conclusions. One of his conclusions is that you can't change nisuch in davening of a shul that you come to. You have to daven like the nisuch of the shul you go to. And he says, though, but it's me so dumb. He thinks that you can't start new nuschos, new shuls with new ways of davening, starting from back in like the 1600s. The shlach is in the 1600s, and eventually moved to Israel. You can't start from back then. But the people come new, so he thinks the Maharashtam would have agreed that you can't make new shuls, because that's creating division among the Jewish people. When it comes to customs, also he thinks that within a shul, you certainly can't have different customs, and that's clear to everybody. And so that within a shul, everybody has to do the same thing. They have to have one minog, and they go by the majority. So because A, you don't want the Torah to look like two Torahs, and B, you don't want to have machloket. So that would mean in Eretz Yisrael, this is still not a problem. But outside of Israel, it would mean that's on Chol HaMoed. You can have some people wear tefillin and some people not wear tefillin. That's two customs within the same shul. You have to have within each shul, according to Ruziel, you'd have to have each shul decide by majority vote what the custom of the shul is, and then everyone would have to stick to that. Then I had mentioned before that the rabbi had said you can't have two, but they did in one city, that every city has to have the same ruling body to decide what they do as a city. And that was an odd ruling because plenty of other people, including the Rif and the Rosh, had Paskin the other way, that you could have two Batei Din. But then Rav Uziel says, but that's only if there are two Batei Din. They have to be established Batei Din, like Ashkenazim and Sephardim. But if you have a situation where everybody until now has been the same, and then you have a dispute about one issue that comes up, right? He says, according to everybody, you can't just then decide, well, everybody will do what they want. You need to have, what you're supposed to have is, the people in that city have to get together, the halachic authorities in that city, they have to rule on it, and they have to decide together what will be done in that city, and that's what's supposed to happen. So this is a strong problem in many, many Jewish communities, because we tend to say, no, you know, if these do this, and these do this, and these, everybody does what they want. And Ruziel is saying that's a significant load to go do problem. And he also suggests, and this is, to me, an astounding one, he thinks that maybe all this idea that you have two batei din, two courses in one city, was only before you had the Gemara, or before you had books like the Rif and the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch. But now that halacha has been so well written down and so well established, right? So and you've got psak so clear, then you have to just look up in the books what it says and follow what they say. So now they just say, well, but you have so many Shuvi, you have Rav Uziel, and Rav Uziel took many important positions that many people strongly disagreed with him about. So his answer, I think, would be that you're supposed to sit down in every place and have the halakhic authorities argue it out and talk about it. And he says, and they should consult the books, and whatever's not in the books explicitly, they should get together and have a discussion and have a majority rule and figure out what it is that they should do as a community. So he was very much in favor of this. It comes up in other, I remember seeing other shivot of his world also was in favor of this idea of getting everybody together and arguing it out. It doesn't yet happen, and people aren't yet willing to cede their independence, because if you do this, you might lose, and then you might have to follow somebody else's customs, and it's a problem. But I think he's highlighting for us that it's not just a problem in terms of unity or this, it's a problem in terms of halacha, because of the issue of lo tidgo didu. That's also true, he says, if two groups got together from different cities, and now they're in the same city, and we're going to allow them to maintain their differences. He says that's only if they each agree that what the other side is doing is a plausible halachic practice. But if they actually disagree about that, then they have to talk to each other, and they have to adopt a custom of the place, or the custom of the place, because that would be lo tidgo didu. Meaning, let's say the Jews from place X, you know, from place X, come to place Y and say, oh, what you're doing here is against halacha, then they can't do that, because that's a lo tidgo duh problem. They'd have to find a way to figure it out with each other and to find a joint common custom thing, because it's not plausible, he's saying. It's not really acceptable to have a situation where the Jews all in one place are keeping two different things, where one group thinks the other group is doing something that's actively wrong. And a simple example would be, let's say there's an Eruv somewhere that people disagree about. Some people carry with it, some people don't carry with it. Rav Yehuda is saying that's a huge Lotus Gadol problem, because the people who aren't carrying with it are saying, you people are violating Shabbos in public. And I know of communities like this, and aside from everything else, there's this problem of Lotus Gadol. The Torah told us we're not allowed to have Jewish communities with that kind of problematic thing. So that is much of it. I didn't get to everything, but that is much of what Rav Yehuda has to say about Lotus Gadol, and a reminder that the definition of unity of the Jewish people is really supposed to be unity in the sense of we do the same thing. And even where we might not be doing the same thing, it needs to be only on issues that really, really don't matter, and where there's a strong history of it, and where we're not casting aspersions on the other person by virtue of saying, well, I wouldn't do that because I think it's wrong. So all that is a problem, because we are supposed to be a goy echad baretz, a unified nation, and the more unity we can develop among ourselves, the better witnesses we will be to the existence of a unified, single, and unitary Kodesh Baruch Hu, creator and master of the universe. And that's what we can always hope that we as Jews do in our communities and in our unity. And that's a responsive day for the 25th of Tishrei. Have a great day.